Welcome to Tech Talk from RNIB Connect Radio, the RNIB's technology show for blind and partially sighted people. See technology differently.
Oh, hello, welcome to another Tech Talk with me, Stephen Scott. I have Robin Christofferson from AbilityNet back with me once again. Hello, Robin.
Hiya, Stephen. How are you doing?
Hiya to you too. I hope you don't have halitosis.
Well, I've got mince pie breath.
Oh,
I feel like Christmas is almost here.
So I had a mince pie yesterday as well. What's going on? Have we just given up this year? Have we just decided it's 2020, it's just basically written off? So if you want to start Christmas now, just go for it. Do what you like. Doesn't matter.
Well, basically they're in the shops, which means that they're in our house. That's how it works.
I thought they were... Well, hang on. Where are we? We're nearly at the end of September, so they'll be moving the Christmas stuff out for Easter in a moment, won't they?
They've got to make way for all the Halloween stuff at some point.
that was in at least July, Robin. Come on. We've got Tim Schwartz with us from lifeafterblindness.com. He's tired today. You all right, Tim?
I am all right, yes. Hello, Stephen and Robin. Yeah, I'm doing okay. It's a little early for me, not for the rest of the actual normal world, but for me it's a little early.
Doing this is weird because of course we're all in different places, and in your case, Tim, different time zones. Andy's also in his penthouse flat overlooking the beautiful city of Glasgow, or as I call it, Glasgow. How you doing, Andy?
Where are the beautiful bits of Glasgow? I'm good, thank you very much. Robin's got mince pies, I've got melons.
Lovely
you
to know.
You are one of the beautiful bits of Glasgow.
I am, fair enough, yeah, the West End, the trendy West End.
No, you.
Here we go. We're almost like kissing each other now. Oh, it's beautiful.
We should leave them alone, Stephen.
Yeah. I know. We'll just get on with the show, shall we, Tim?
Since we're
talking about what's in front of us, I've got Jaffa cakes, which I haven't eaten. They've been sitting here since last night, and I haven't. I know it is. I am amazed.
Not unwrapped, I hope.
They are.
They'll be like bricks now.
Well, no, they're not unwrapped. No, they're still in their packaging.
Just checking.
Yeah, oh, that's important. And they are unbranded ones.
They're better.
That's what I was thinking as well, yeah. Much better. So, let's get into the show this week. There is a lot for us to be talking about this week. Amazon is where we're going to start because, obviously, they are selling everything. Although, not as much as last year. Not as many products as last year. But we were interested to watch, not a live event, but an event which was... streamed, I guess, to journalists only. Nobody else seemed to get any access to it that I could find. And I had to follow on Twitter, quite frankly. But it's happened. They've launched a bunch of new products. They've moved things along a little bit, so the Amazon Echo is now no longer Pringle-shaped. It's ball-shaped. Does this appeal to anyone?
It's the dot that has expanded out into a sphere, from my understanding. Well, that's how it was written up anyway.
Oh, no, they both
have. They are still selling it, I know.
Yeah, they're still selling the flat... Or as I call it, the fat hockey puck. That they're still selling that one. But yeah, you can. Of course, you'll get that at a sale price, I'm sure. But no, the new one, the new Echo Dot and the new Echo, or Echo Medium, as I like to call it, is a sphere. Yes.
Isn't that what it's called, Echo Sphere?
No.
Oh.
It should be.
Shame.
It's just the new Echo.
It's just the new Echo.
It needs a name.
The Echo Medium.
Quite obviously a dot.
Yeah. Stephen's dubbed it the Echo Medium Sphere, so, yeah.
The other one's obviously Echo Pringle Can. That's its official name, isn't it?
Well, that is the official name that we call it. Yeah, that is right. But yeah, this is quite good. I mean, so they've got these new Echoes. And look, this is no great surprise. Of course they're going to do this. But what's in it? Well, apparently better speakers, although... That's one of these things you need to decide for yourself. For Robin, who has terrible ears for
don't
listening,
care.
You don't care. No, exactly. You'd listen to a wasp in a jar and you'd be happy.
As long as he was buzzing Radio 4, that would be fine.
Or RNIB Connect Radio.
Mm. Oh, absolutely. Sorry.
Thank you. Oh, dear. So that is obviously a great thing. I don't want to spend too much time on the Echoes. I mean, yes, a new design, it's a new shape. I mean, look, guys, you tell me your thoughts, but I think there's other more interesting products to talk about, don't you?
Are you including the show in that, the new show?
Well, yeah, the show is definitely an interesting product. So I remember years ago I had a 20-inch iMac, which was a kind of a spherical design as well. It was like a half ball, if you like. What do they call it? I can't remember the name of the design of it. But it was like a circular design in the base, and then there was a metal arm that came out, and there was a flat screen in front. Mm-hmm. And in the advertising for it, the person who would walk by the store was looking at it, and the Mac would kind of follow them around the room as if it was like, you know, watching them. And it was to give the sense of the Mac had a personality all of its own, right? It was this cute little thing. Well, you now have that in real life, because the Amazon Echo Show 10, the new design, is, to my understanding, an Echo Show tablet, essentially, an Echo Show 10 tablet stuck on the front of a HomePod, which is the best way to describe it, because that's kind of what it looks like. It's got your kind of big round speaker at the back, and it's got this flat screen at the front. And that screen moves when you're on a video call. It will move around the room and follow you. Obviously, to a certain degree, it's not going to literally move around and follow you, but it, you know, the screen will move around and
unlike
turn.
A pivot, yes.
Unlike something we're talking about later, yeah.
Yeah.
That's another ballgame. That is a very interesting phone chat. But yeah, so the Echo Show 10
like
is probably quite
idea.
Exciting. Yeah, yeah.
Really like it. You know, whether they would, you know, the family would want one in the house, I don't know, because it's, you know, borderline creepy. But it's also going to have Netflix on for the first time on the shows.
Yeah, that's right.
So yeah, you could, you know, walk around the room and not have to miss any of your favourite shows while you're doing the cooking or whatever. So yeah,
and you
good.
Get Amazon Prime on there anyway. So yep. that's cool.
And in these days of you know, so many virtual boardrooms with the pandemic and all, and a lot of people working from home, I could see this being a boardroom kind of niche thing. I don't know if you guys ever saw the movie in the 90s, the Stallone movie, Judge Dredd. And there's a scene they're having a meeting in a boardroom, or the local government officials having a meeting, and all the monitors on the desk, or on the table, I should say, the boardroom table, all move as they walk around the room and they look at each other. You know, there's nobody actually physically there with each other. They're just all on monitors and it's moving around. And that's what this reminded me of. And I could kind of see that in these days, like I said, of virtual meetings and, you know, boardrooms and people having to stay safe at home. Having it, you know, follow around the room and things like that. It's interesting. Creepy, but interesting.
Did it say what service it would use for video conferencing, what it supports? Because they've got their own Chime, haven't they?
Well, they do, but this is very interesting. So I was thinking this as well when I saw this. I thought, well, what would you... I mean, I know you can do video call to some degree with drop-in. You can call people, video call them on your Echo. But no, it's gone further than that now. They have integrations with, wait for it, Zoom and Skype. There is another one which has come off, which I can't remember the name of. There was four. I can't remember the name of it now. But yeah, there was definitely Zoom and Skype, and that is going to be interesting. I don't know, Tim, if this is going to be the kind of device that will replace anything for business users. I'm not sure about that, because if you think about it, most business people are going to be having their laptops or their phones, right, or their tablets. They're going to be using all that. But I do think this is a brilliant leisure device, and they are really getting into that market. I think Zoom, for a lot of people, especially pre-pandemic, we were thinking of Zoom as a business platform. Whereas, you know, since pandemic, people have been using it for all kinds of leisure activities, connecting and all the rest. So I think for this, for families, connecting through Zoom or connecting through Skype or through Amazon Chime, you know, connecting that way and sort of video calling each other, that is going to be the new norm. This is targeting the Facebook portal, I think.
Definitely.
Absolutely is.
It's a brilliant
and
device.
And Teams have a unique, dedicated screen device as well that's meant to sit on people's desks in the workplace or at home now.
Yeah.
But that's like $600. So what's the price on this one? Do we have any pricing?
Yeah, $250.
Yeah, you see.
So will it be that when it comes here? Probably. Bear in mind, and you know, the other thing to remember is Black Friday, Prime Day, they'll knock the price. So if you're thinking of getting one of these, first of all, it ain't out yet, and there's no date, I don't think, on this being released. The Echoes, the new Echo and the Echo Dot, they are slated for release on October 22nd. Depending on the one you want, you might be waiting till November 5th. But at the moment, anyway, with this particular Amazon Echo Show 10, there's no release date. That may have changed, Andy. You might be checking the website at the moment and seeing if it's come up.
Yeah, I'm having a read yet. No, nothing that I can see that stands out. The only thing is what we're going to be talking about later, coming next year, but nothing for this new device, no.
So, yeah, I think that's going to be cool. But no, let's talk about the really cool device that Amazon announced. This is insane. So you might know that Ring is part of Amazon, and if you realize that, this will all make sense. So Amazon now bought Ring. Was it last year, year before?
A couple of years ago.
A couple of years ago.
Yeah.
So when they bought that, Obviously, that meant that there was more integration with the products. And then other products came out from Ring, such as the Ring Alarm, and home safety has become a big deal in the house as well as externally. Well, here's the thing. Have you ever wondered what would happen if a burglar entered your house and you wanted to maybe get a picture of them before they ran away when the alarm starts going crazy? Well, now you can, thanks to this bizarre device that they've launched called, is it the Always Home Cam?
Yes.
It's a drone that lives inside your house that can fly around your house when it senses danger. So if the alarm goes off, it could head to the back door where it knows, for example, that's where the bad person has come in, and it can snap a picture of them and squirt water in their face, or I don't know what it does, to be honest.
Lasers.
It drops a big net on them.
Stink bombs.
I just hope it's not your mum who's, you know, forgotten her keys or something, you know, trying to get in.
Well, it'll have face recognition, maybe. No,
hopefully. Just, no, I don't think it does. But it will have some kind of AI, I think, built into it, and that could be useful as well. But, yeah, this is going to come to the US first, Tim. So I think you're going to be the first to get it. You going to buy one?
I hope so. We'll talk to the wife and see how that goes. But I'm interested. And Amazon is really ramping these types of devices up and this type of AI, because as we've talked about in the past, way, way back with the Amazon Echo devices being able to detect certain sounds, and they've been slowly rolling that out to detect breaking glass and things like that. We now have that actually with iOS even. You know, Apple has integrated that into your iOS to detect doorbells and knocking at the door and breaking glass and things. So this is, I think, kind of the next big thing, to have this drone react to those kinds of sounds and all of a sudden, be able to film or take a picture. And, you know, depending on the reviews, and the price might just be right. And it's so tiny and cute from what I can understand. It's just such a nice little thing. I'm interested in this. I'll have to wait and see how it goes and how it works, but I am interested.
There's going to have to be some significant smarts behind this, because, you could imagine that, I don't know how it's going to detect that the house is empty, but you could imagine that it might get a little bit confused and see someone leaving and think, okay, there's nobody else in the house, there's no movement, but someone's asleep on the sofa. And when they get up, they're falsely seen as someone who's an intruder, and hell breaks loose.
No, the way it'll work is it links in with your Ring alarm system. So ideally, you would have both.
Right. So you,
once you've got the alarm activated, then it would become available to do its thing. I mean, essentially, the idea is that you would only be using this when you're out. I think there's actually some applications for this to be used in other ways. I mean, it's a bit weird, right? Because a lot of things you think about, there's already solutions for. So if you were thinking, well, who is it that's peering in the front window? Send a drone to check. You know, there's other ways to do that. The Ring doorbell could help you with that. If you've lost something in the house, yes, okay, arguably you could ask the Ring door, home cam, to go and find it for you, I guess, if it can do that. Maybe using AI, it could detect where your keys are and go and, I don't know if it can, certainly can't pick them up and bring them to you, but it could alert you to where they are.
Not yet.
But then, well, exactly. But, you know, there's other solutions for that. There's Tile, there's potentially going to be AirTags from Apple on that one. So, you know, this is being aimed clearly for home security, and all the videos, all the promotional videos are showing, you know, the intruder coming in the back door and being, you know, accosted by this device.
Well, it's kind of like
he's quoted in the video as going, "Oh no!" And then the big text on screen says, "Oh yes."
Because that's like, exactly how every burglar knows.
Yes, exactly.
He's got a little eye mask on. 1930s.
You know, it's very similar to how the Echo does it now for home security. You are expected to use it when you're leaving, and you actually just say, "Lady A, I'm leaving." And then it will turn on the feature for the Amazon Guard, I think that's
Alexa
called.
Guard.
Yeah.
We don't have that here.
Yeah, no, you guys don't have that yet. I wish it would branch out, you know, like everything else with Amazon. You know, for whatever reason, they let us have it first. Although, as I always say, they let us beta test it here first so that it's actually finished by the time you guys get it. So that's why.
Very kind.
Isn't that nice of us?
So lovely.
So nice, yes. But no, I mean, you just simply say, "I'm leaving," and Guard turns on and starts listening for those sounds. And same idea, like you said, Stephen, to set the Ring alarm, and the drone will hop into action. And I don't know. It's just, it's interesting. If you don't already have cams all over, inside or out, or you know, Ring. I mean, presumably, if you're getting this, you probably have a Ring doorbell already, and are familiar with the technology. But it's just, it's another step forward in that kind of protection that Amazon is trying to help us with.
Does it go upstairs as well?
No.
It's no, like a it Dalek. It can't go upstairs. Although I say that, there was that one episode. But anyway, no, it doesn't go upstairs. Don't get me started.
It doesn't go outside either. So
yeah, we'll go outside, right.
Okay. Ideal if you're in a flat, but not if you've got like a shed that you also want checked.
So depending on the price and how good it is.
This is perfect for me because I don't go outside and I don't like going upstairs. So it's basically me.
But apparently it's very loud, and that's on purpose to be very, very loud.
Like me. Yeah,
but it doesn't go outside or upstairs, and it's loud. Yes, it is.
They've developed me.
They designed this after you, Stephen.
Thanks for that.
Does it hover at the buffet? Oh,
you can get really cheap and really easy to set up, like stick-up cams. Yeah. Where there is a movement sensor and they integrate into, you know, Amazon sell their own.
But it's the ecosystem thing, isn't it? You're right. It's about ecosystem here. And this is what they're trying to do is get us, you know, Ring is part of the Amazon infrastructure. So they want to bring it all together. And it does make a lot of sense. I want to talk a bit about the software side of things because there's been a lot of work going on under the hood. And I think this is the bigger development, I guess, is the attempt to make Lady A's voice more natural. And make the conversation more natural. There was a lot of talk about that at the event, where they want to. There's even a weird feature where you can now, if you're having a conversation, say we were just all talking away like this, and someone has a view on something and or an opinion on something and doesn't know the fact on it, you know you can bring her into the conversation by saying, "Lady A, join the conversation," and she will become part of it in some way, which is very weird. I don't know how that'll work, but it's the intention, I think. Is to try and make the conversation that it's having with you more natural, and it's doing part of that with bringing the technology of, you know, gathering the responses onto the device. You know, the Echo is actually, there's one thing we didn't mention on the Echo is that the neural engine is going to be built into the device, so a lot of processing will be done on board, which means quicker responses to questions. And one other thing I want to mention on the Echo side of things, just briefly, is that. And not much has been made of this so far, but it's got a hub built in, the Zigbee hub. So,
yeah,
you know,
like
no
this.
Longer you don't have to buy the Echo Plus anymore. The Echo is the Echo Plus, which is pretty cool.
Mm.
Okay, really, well, clearly
that doesn't sound very convinced. Yeah, no, I think this is fantastic because, yeah, the Echo Plus, or what did you call it back in the day, Stephen? The Echo Big?
Big.
The Big, yes, very official name. Yeah, you had to get that to get a hub or to purchase a separate hub or, you know, purchase non-hub home-type products, and that can always be tricky, but for people who just want something to work, they don't understand about having a hub to operate all this stuff, and they just want to open it out of the box and have it work. I think this is smart for them to finally integrate the hub in there. It's just part, you know, it's a feature, basically, instead of an extra, and I think that's a good move.
Yeah. So for people that aren't sure, the hub is the bit that can communicate with all of the stick-up cams and, you know, other Ring doorbell and stuff. So yeah,
it's that link, isn't it, between
yes.
your smart. It makes the camera smart. It gives it, well, it doesn't make the camera smart, but it makes the camera connect to the other devices. So if you, for example, had a Ring doorbell, you would need a hub in some way to connect it to the other. In this case, I think with the Ring, it's the Chime. Is it just called the Chime Pro, something like that? And you just plug that in, and that kind of connects it through your Wi-Fi to your Amazon Echo device through the app. And then once it's connected up, you can say things like, Echo, show me the front door, talk to the front door, and it will act as an intercom even with your Echo Dot, or if you've got Fire TV, you can, you know, connect it there. I mean, there's other stuff been launched. There's so much stuff to talk about. I must say, I love Amazon's events because it's probably the best event of the year, actually, for kits and stuff to talk about, because it's
really
also
toys.
It is,
never
yeah.
Know. Last year they had, what, 15, actually yeah. Literally 15 different devices. Some worked, some great, you know, some were great, some didn't come out but...
I felt this year it was a bit more mature.
It
Their
was.
Approach was more mature. They didn't just sort of say, oh, look, it's a... I mean, apart from the Ring drone perhaps around the house, that might be a bit out there, but no, I mean, it felt a bit more together this year. They were bringing out products that hopefully will get to all territories. They are, you know, traditionally quite bad for things appearing in the US or only available here, you know. Hopefully that changes, but some other things did come out. New Fire TV stick and a new Fire TV
calling.
Stick light. Yes, that's right. So they're kind of bringing all the features into one, aren't they? Although, how's that going to work, Robin? If you've got a Fire TV stick with video calling, where's the camera?
Yeah, that's a really good question. I would suspect that it would come with a little tiny webcam that you could sort of hook onto the top of your TV, or maybe. Well, I don't know, because some of those come with an HDMI, you know, on the end of a little cable, don't they? So the actual thing itself could maybe be up, angled up and hooked onto the top of the TV. Right, I don't know. We'll have to wait and see.
I don't know.
Yeah.
But yeah, so the Fire TV Stick Lite as well. Now, this is a strange one for me. I don't really understand the point here. I mean, I maybe this is wrong to say, and I'll probably get harangued for this on the emails, but I think if you can afford $30 or £30, as it will be, for the Fire TV Stick, why couldn't you just spend an extra 10 and get the £40 one?
Because you're buying all the other goodies as well, that's why. All adds up.
Yeah, I just find it's a strange price. It's $29.99 for the Fire Stick TV Lite, and the Fire TV Stick regular is £10, $10 more. I don't know. I don't want to think about it. I mean, you're not missing much either. I mean, I think the only key difference is, what's the main thing you lose is the... You don't get 4K in the other, the light one. I think you don't get a voice remote either on the light. So, I mean, maybe for a bedroom, it's not a bad thing.
I think that's worth the $10 / pounds. I think that's worth it, but wait till Amazon Prime Day and it'll probably be $10 cheaper anyway. So, yeah, I mean, at this point, especially if you're looking forward and you're like, you know what, I don't maybe have a 4K TV now, or I don't really care about, you know, some of the features, why not just spend 10 more and just go ahead and do it, you know, case you're going to need it later on, that prolongs the, you know, the life of the device. So it is an interesting price point. It makes sense as far as fairness of price, which Amazon is usually pretty good about doing, pricing things, you know, reasonably. But yeah, I thought that was kind of odd.
I'm actually pleased that we don't have an Apple TV 4K version. We've got the older one because we haven't got a 4K TV. Nobody cares about that level of resolution. And it means that we'll never by mistake or inadvertently pull down those mega, you know, 10 gig files to watch the same program that we would have watched. You know, so who knows? I mean, it's horses for courses. And it really sounds like Amazon want to put as much out there as possible so that they, you know, they're throwing stuff against the wall, aren't they, and seeing what people like.
What sticks. Oh, dear. Okay, so... Fire
I just
TV.
Got it. So slow.
I know. Come on, Robin. Come on.
And I'm the one who's just woken up.
I know. So, yeah, we've got the new Fire TV stick. We've got... what else have we got hardware-wise? I think that's it, hardware-wise.
Bunch of stuff for the car, but we won't go there.
Yeah. An updated range of Eero hubs. Extend a property's broadband connection via a mesh network.
So
are the bee's knees, I'm sorry.
Well, they are, yes, but a lot of people are not happy about these ones. The new versions will support Wi-Fi 6, good. Bad news is that the extenders will not have Ethernet ports in them. So if you wanted to put the extender next to something with an Ethernet port, say you maybe connected to a PC, and that's how you're connecting it, as opposed to Wi-Fi, then you're not going to have that option. Whereas the older version did have that. So that's a bit of a negative. A few people aren't happy about that. I kind of get that.
I think for something like that, yeah, it's a problem, but I wouldn't be surprised if it was backwardly compatible if you had, you know, if you wanted to get one of the old extenders, because you can buy them separately.
There's a couple of other things. I'm not sure if you'll be able to add anything to these. The Alexa Care Hub, a service that allows people to monitor an elderly relative's interactions with an Echo device.
I think this is fantastic. I love this.
It gives you the option to call for help for that party as well. So, yeah.
I mean, again, this kind of eats into a lot of specialist tech areas where there have been specialist devices like pendants people wear around their necks, services they pay for. You know, Lady A is kind of bringing a lot of that in. So you can have emergency contact calling, help and advice as well. So I think what was interesting was one of the opinion pieces I read following the event was people are beginning to see Lady A as a vital service in their home, as well as seeing it as entertainment value and for fun. It's beginning to get to that level, and the pandemic has brought that about in a lot of cases. People really do lean on it a lot more than they perhaps have done in the past. Amazon clearly taking note of that and realising it and therefore creating these services. Guard as well is a good one. I mean, that's obviously available in the States at the moment. That's being increased as well with Guard Plus, which gives... This gets into a tricky area for me, because one of the things it will detect, as well as things like, you know, smashing glass or a baby crying, or sirens or those kind of things, it will also pick up now on snoring. Uh-oh. It says it'll do things if you snore. I don't know what it's going to do. Is it punch you in the face, or what's it going to do?
That's where the drone comes in.
Yeah, the drone will come land on your face. Yes.
Yeah.
Taser.
I'm kind of terrified about that, to be honest, because my wife's always telling me off for my snoring. Not that I can do much about it.
With Lady A becoming more conversational, maybe if you're snoring, it detects it, and then Lady A will come on and say, "You are snoring. Please wake up and roll over," or something, you know. It'll interact for you, or the, you know, I don't know. But yeah, I mean, I like these types of advances with Amazon. It's kind of like what we said with the Apple Watch, where it's like, okay, if you're not going to use it for fitness or, you know, tracking certain things like that, getting notifications, but for, you know, an elderly parent or grandparent or someone in your family, you know, who's unstable on their feet, maybe, you know, with a fall detection and emergency contact, you know, ability and things like that, it's almost worth every penny just for that kind of protection and helping your family member. And something like this with the Echo now, with them expanding Guard, like you said, Guard Plus, and then, you know, the drone and all these different things, I really like this direction. When I heard them say, you know, okay, all you have to do is say, Lady A, help. That simply, you know, I immediately think of my grandmother. I mean, she has Amazon Echoes and you know, can use them pretty well and is okay with it and is not, you know, creeped out by it or anything. But if it's just as simple as just saying help, that's so easy. And it immediately calls an emergency contact that you've already set up, which, you know, presumably they can do or you can do for them. So I like this direction. And adding to that with the conversational aspects of Lady A going forward, yeah, I think that these are good steps for Amazon to be making.
I worry about my dad in particular, because my dad has a terrible stutter, and he really struggles with his speech. And, you know, he uses Lady A, and it actually is great with him. It never seems to... And I think because he's now comfortable with it, he stutters less when he's using it. But I think about, you know, a high-pressure situation, something happens to my mum and he needs help, you know, calling 999 for him would be a real challenge. Whereas if he can very quickly just get the word help out,
help. Yeah.
Then that's going to be, you know, a big help for him.
Well,
because
Lady
it'll,
A
it'll get through to me and we can sort it out.
Yeah, and Lady A is supposed to be getting better at responding to your speech, understanding your speech patterns. That's one of the things that they're working on. I saw that one of the new things is to detect if they're talking to a child as opposed to an adult, so it can change maybe how it speaks or what it's saying, how it's saying it. Definitely not using the Samuel Jackson voice, which I've told that story, I think, to you a long time ago, Stephen, where we paid the 99 cents for Samuel Jackson to have the cursing version and the normal non-cursing version. And I forgot which one I had turned on one day and started talking to it with my daughter sitting right next to me. And wow, whoops. So, yeah, but otherwise, yeah, I think that over time with Lady A learning that, and they talked about that a little bit in this event of learning your speech patterns and getting more conversational, that could be very helpful for somebody like your dad who may have trouble talking to it or it has trouble understanding. I think that'll be a big help.
Okay, well, look, we could talk about Amazon all day, frankly, because there's so much exciting stuff to talk about. We will come back to it. Tell us your thoughts about the event. What are you going to be buying? Do you fancy one of these new Samsung? That's where we're going next. My notes are talking to me. Amazon products. Well, we are going to talk about Samsung in a moment. I just want to tell you, though, a bit later we're going to talk about RNIB launching a new web accessibility toolkit. This is to encourage public sector organizations and other organizations as well to take their website a bit more seriously and make it more accessible to all. There's some new features in Zoom that's making it more accessible, so we're going to talk about that this week. And also, we've got a demo that Robin promised us of using voiceover recognition on iOS 14. I was intrigued by this, Robin. Because
yeah, no, I think it's
brilliant. Yeah,
I think it is. Well, people can decide for themselves.
And we'll also be talking about some of our own favourite features as well. And yes, we will have emails.
Email.
But not right now. Let's talk about Samsung first. Samsung have launched a new S20 FE, the F standing for Fan Edition. Can't imagine what earth they're playing on there.
They have fans.
Yeah, fans, yeah. Well, this is the thing, right? So they put this out with a, well, this is what the fans wanted. really? The S20's only been out for like 10 minutes. Mm-hmm. Suddenly the fans are telling us what new phones they want. I don't think so.
Maybe they had a problem with overheating and this one's got an internal fan.
Oh, that's a low blow.
Fan to keep it cool from exploding. On. Yeah.
Fire edition. Yeah, maybe not. But look, I wanted to defer to Uswitch here because they summarised this really well. They sent us in a comment actually just after the announcement of this, and Andy's going to read this. I think this summarises quite a lot actually about what the device is capable of and why it could be good for a lot of people.
Right, yeah, this is a comment from Rubikra. He goes on to say, this year has seen the rise of mid-range smartphone markets, and now Samsung joins Apple and Google in launching the S20 Fan Edition, a little brother of the S20, at £699 for the 5G version and £599 for the 4G model. The S20 FE is significantly cheaper than the £899 S20, and you get a bigger 6.5-inch 120Hz screen as well. The S20 FE also upstages its sibling with a better battery life, boasting a so-called all-day 4,500 mAh capacity. The FE's triple camera setup also trumps the similarly priced iPhone SE single snapper. There's a dig there, right there. With a 12-megapixel wide lens, a 12-megapixel ultra-wide, and an 8-megapixel telephoto. And yeah, do you want me to keep going on?
I mean, that sums it up, really, doesn't it?
Yeah, it's
kind of saying basically it's a good product that, you know, is going to get you a lot of phone for a bit less money. Robin, what are you thinking about this? First of all, the phone itself, and you know, obviously the pricing structure here.
Well, you can see where they're heading. You know, they want a phone that's they want to cover all the bases from entry level right up to, you know, the £2,000 Z Flip 2 or whatever it's called. So, yeah, I mean, get it out there. Let people decide for themselves. But I must say, there's now a rumour of an iPhone mini. So they're really going to be kind of doing the same sort of thing and covering all the bases too. Whether it's true or not, I don't know, but it's a reliable source.
Are you talking about the
source.
iPhone 12 mini?
Yeah.
Yeah,
it's
right,
going to
yeah.
be, smaller than the SE. So, yeah, it's like we're seeing similar kind of approaches across the different manufacturers to get out as many products as possible to see if they can, you know, wring out every penny from every last corner of their potential market. So, yeah, why not?
Why not? Yeah, exactly.
Well, yeah, because 2 years ago, the big new in thing was larger phones. We don't want tablets. We want little mini tablets. So let's have a large screen on our phone. 6.5 or more inches, 7 inches. It's like, okay, I could just buy a tablet for that. But and now it's everything's got to be small. Everything's got to fit literally in the palm of your hand. So I can't keep up. But I do think it is smart to have kind of that small, medium, and large proposition there to be able to say, you know what, we're going to cover everybody in the market. If you want a smaller phone, you know, with certain specs, but not everything, we can give you that. If you want, you know, something in the middle or the high end, you know, like you said, Robin, you know, the £2,000 ridiculousness, you know, that does everything for you, then you can have that. So it's smart, but I don't know. I mean, just so soon after releasing something else that's similar and a little more expensive, but not... It's not like, you know, $400 that I spent on my SE compared to, you know, $1,200 that I could have spent on the 11 Pro or something last year.
Mm-hmm. Well, indeed. I mean, I think if you're looking for an Android phone, I would say part of me was thinking today, is this the new blind phone? You know, I always talk about the blind edition
for Android,
with the
possibly.
iPhone SE. Yeah. I don't know, though, because you still get Google cheaper, much cheaper.
Yeah, you
phone.
Get a 4A for cheaper, I think, right? Or at least a 3A.
But then there's a rumor out this week, and it is a rumor, I don't know about this one personally, but the suggestion is that the Google Pixel 5 that's due to be launched next week, that is going to be maybe the last Pixel phone they ever make. Who collapsed against the microphone?
Sorry.
One? Yeah, I mean, it was, wow. You were so shocked.
Passed out. You know what? I was yawning and I was covering my mouth.
Well, thanks Nothing. For that. I feel even worse.
The Android hate continues. Gorgeous,
and yawning at the phone announcement or yawning at Stephen talking about it?
Probably both.
Yeah, both.
Probably both. Yes. But no, I mean, I think this might, if that's the case, if that's the last Google Pixel, then it is over to Samsung, really, to do this. I mean, I know there are other manufacturers, and I get that. You know, it's not the only game in town. But, you know, Samsung clearly are at the top of their game on this one. And, you know, if they're going to start creating the next budget phones, then they're starting at a pretty high bar, which is a pretty smart move, if you think about it.
Yeah, if I were an Android user and I was in the market for a new Android and I didn't want to spend, you know, $1,000+ for it, I just wanted that kind of lower or middle range, I guess you could say, for this price, this would be interesting. This would be something that I would be looking into if I were that Android user looking for something new.
Yeah, definitely. Okay, look, I want to move on because there's a lot of stuff to talk about. Lots and lots of news.
News from the internet.
Yeah, I think, in fairness, we're maybe a bit late with that because the whole thing's been about the news.
I was gonna say, what have we been talking about? Yeah.
Yeah, I know. What am I doing here? I don't know why. It says on the running order that I'm supposed to talk about it now, so I did. Yeah, let's talk about some news. Thank you. I know for once I'm listening to rules. Okay, so let's talk about this because this is an interesting story. RNIB are bringing out a new accessible web accessibility toolkit to try and encourage, everybody, frankly, to think about the website, to think about accessibility on their website. This follows a new piece of legislation that came into force on the 23rd of September to help ensure that public sector websites are accessible to everyone, including many blind and partially sighted people. The new web accessibility regulations require all websites operated by or on behalf of public sector bodies comply with certain accessibility standards and proven they've done so. In our weekly chat with Matt Stringer, the CEO of RNIB, talking to me on Friday's Daily Connect program, as he often does, I asked him about this and what RNIB were doing to promote web accessibility with companies and public sector bodies.
Making sure information is accessible in any format from any body, any institution, for people that need it to be presented in different formats to make it fully accessible has been a big part of what we've been campaigning on for a long time. And actually it's got more acute during COVID because of the need to make sure, you know, UK government, devolved nations, governments, bodies like the NHS, Public Health England, et cetera, you know, were putting out information which was accessible. And clearly at the start of lockdown, there was a lot of information coming out of what to do, you know, and it was absolutely not acceptable that information wasn't accessible. So we've been working very hard on that, which is sort of a subset of the broader point, which is that, you know, everybody should be putting out information which is fully accessible.
So part of this toolkit that's coming out is to help companies, but also to help us as blind people report inaccessible websites as well. So the toolkit explains current law as it applies to public and non-public websites, as well as the changes brought in by these new regulations. So it outlines the steps you can take to complain about inaccessibility following the recent changes, and includes a supporting material and letter templates as well if you want to further your action. All information available at rnib.org.uk. Search for Web Accessibility Toolkit.
Brilliant. Really, really good. Now, because I'm from AbilityNet and they very kindly let me participate in this brilliant podcast, I think they would actually stop me from ever participating again if I didn't mention that, you know, AbilityNet, being a tech and disability charity, have a range of services for accessibility of websites and apps too, and we've also created a package of services and information for specifically for public sector and also specifically for higher education, because we have also been inundated, I'm sure, like the RNIB has, because the public sector regulations have now come into effect. The final deadline has passed. And so yeah, we're being swamped too. So I think I need to throw that in there if you want me to carry on being a co-host.
Legally, you have to say it. Yeah.
They'd never forgive me if I didn't mention that.
No, it's very worth mentioning. It's a very important piece of work. You know, the more we can do to get web accessibility right, the better. But we, as blind people, are part of that discussion. We can't all just moan about it in our own silos. We've got to come together and talk about it.
And I must also flag irony. I mean, this is so ironic. You could cut it with a hacksaw. You mentioned there about accessible communications from the government. I'm putting up an article on the AbilityNet website today. This will be last week by the time this comes out, probably, that talks about how, because I'm on the All Party Parliamentary Group for Disability, the government, you know, advisory group, and we wrote to the Prime Minister back in April asking him to make assurances about, you know, making sure that disabled people aren't left behind during COVID and transition to home working and all these, having to do all these things online, etc. 2.5 months later, they replied, the Prime Minister himself, and it was a 4-page PDF of photographs of pages. So, and this document, this letter was reassuring everybody that the government will do everything they can. And the very first point that it made in this letter was that the importance of accessible communication, a bit like you just said there. And it was a completely inaccessible document. Just thought I'd throw that in there.
Oh, dear. Oh, dear. Okay. Let's talk about Zoom, shall we? Zoom, last week, on Wednesday last week, launched new features designed to make the platform more accessible to all of us. Now, what you can do is you can rearrange videos in gallery view into whichever order you want by clicking, dragging, and dropping. Now, you might think, well, why would you want to do this? Well, for someone with a disability, say someone who is deaf, they can move their interpreter's video closer to them to see who's sharing content in order to see them more clearly or easily, for instance. So it's not constantly, you know, jumping between one video and the other. You can pin multiple videos during meetings to keep the most important content in place. Very helpful, as I say, for people who can keep an interpreter and a speaker in the same spot. Hosts and co-hosts can give permission for up to 9 people to pin multiple videos. There's also multi-spotlights, similar to multi-pinning, except the spotlighted videos appear for everyone in a meeting. So a host and a co-host can spotlight 9 people. Very helpful, of course, where you know, big meetings are you know, set up and you want organisers to highlight, you know, interpreters and speakers for everyone, for example. There are also some other updates as well. Focused tools, accessibility-focused tools such as closed captioning, which is good. Screen reader support, which I have to say, Zoom is very screen reader friendly in my view.
Yep.
And keyboard shortcuts as well, which is always good to have. They are really pushing accessibility on Zoom, which I think is fantastic. And I think I know other companies are doing the same. I am intrigued about hearing that Zoom's coming to a platform like the Amazon Echo. We know, for example, the Amazon Echo has got a voice view screen reader built in. How friendly will Zoom be on that is a big question. But I'm hoping they'll be thinking this through, considering the amount of work they've put into the platform generally. You agree?
Yeah, I should say that you can already join a Zoom call where the invite has included telephone numbers, because you can just ask the on the Echo, because you can just ask the A lady to dial that number, and then if there's a pin, you can put that in as well. So you can already do that, but yeah, this would be just brilliant, really good.
Yeah, I really like that Zoom is taking the initiative to do this and make sure that they don't leave accessibility out. So many times you get a company like this who, you know, we've been using Zoom for a long time in various different ways, and it's been around, but the pandemic has really brought Zoom to the forefront, no pun intended, with these, you know, video pins and things. But but for them to say, okay, you know what, we understand that there is a completely different slice of user here that we need to be addressing, that we need to make sure that we're taking care of. I'm happy every time. I mean, that's all you can say is anytime any company is doing this and making sure that, you know, keyboard shortcuts are available and these types of things, it's a good thing. Although that said, I mean, I barely know half of the features in Zoom as it is. So to add anything else and make them be accessible, I don't know what I'm going to do with it all, but it is a good thing.
Yeah, absolutely. Also, just want to pick up on the news of the new contact tracing app that has been launched, the Test and Trace app in England and Wales. More than 1 million people downloaded the app within its first day of release. NHS COVID-19 instructs users to self-isolate for 14 days if it detects they were nearby someone who has the virus. It's also got a check-in scanner as well. This is causing a bit of concern among blind and partially sighted people. I think the demonstration of how to scan a QR code is perhaps a little bit inaccessible. But on the whole, it seems that the app is reasonably accessible. We got one of our listeners was right off the mark on this one. As soon as it had launched, had got in touch with us. Peter Stewart told us that he's found it accessible.
Test and Trace app is quite easy to download. You download it and you enter your phone's ID, and then it will prompt you for your postcode, and you enter the first three digits or letters and digits. The app will come down, and when loaded, if you tap the postcode on the top right of your screen, it will tell you the threat level from COVID-19 in your area. About halfway down the screen, there are some menu items. If you tap on those with your accessibility on, they will read to you what they are. They are Venue Checker, About the App, and there is one other, and I can't remember what it is. But it's quite easy to follow, quite easy to download. When you tap on the venue button, it will ask you for the camera to be allowed access. Then you point the phone at the QR code displayed in the area that you're visiting, and job done. Please download it. It will help everybody, irrespective of your politics.
And as Peter says, you know, downloading it is important, and we must do that. Anyone aged 16 and over is being asked to install the app. The government plans to give its own download tally this week. So, yeah, interesting story there. Of course, lots of stuff in the news. Let's move on, though. I'm powering us along here, guys, because there is so much to get through. Let's move on to voiceover recognition. This was a new feature in iOS 14. Robin's been testing it out this week for us.
Let's start our quick demo of how voiceover recognition works in iOS 14 in LinkedIn. And here we are in LinkedIn. Here are some recent people that I've connected with. And now, each time we flick onto their profile, we get a description of, I'm assuming, their profile picture.
Views the profile. Button. Image. Adult. Baseball hat. Glasses. Sant Kumar is now with message. Views the profile. Button. Image. Adult. Glasses. Tie. Patrick O. Message. Views the profile. Button. Image. Adult. Headphones.
Wearing headphones, I assume. Cool. Let's have a look at Twitter. Here we've got a tweet.
I'm selling these frankly outrageous Meister holographic shoes on eBay. Mm. Size UK4 eBay. CMPNID equal link, portrait, cardboard box, footwear, textile.
There you go.
Portrait, boot trainer.
Boot trainer. What about Facebook? So here we are in Facebook. Somebody has posted an update about being in Disneyland.
These are the goodest pancakes I've ever had at Disney's Fort Wilderness Resort and Campground.
These are the goodest? Let's see what the image is.
Child, plate, table. Child, plate, table.
It repeated it twice, not sure why.
Like, button.
And then we get onto the
comment, button.
Buttons, etc. Yeah, there you go. Lastly, let's look at how it can label unlabeled controls in an app. Here we are in the Tile app in the bottom left corner.
Selected. Tab. 1 of 3.
Unlabeled tab. If we flick to the right.
Tab. 2 of 3. Location.
So there you heard the little beep before saying the word location. It actually did OCR on that tab that didn't have a proper label on it, and it grabbed the text in the image called location. Let's flick to the right again.
Tab. 3 of 3. Mail.
Mail. Okay, there you go. So that's what voiceover recognition sounds like. It's a real boon to help us understand what images are and those pesky unlabeled controls, or some of them at least.
Thank you, Robin, demonstrating voiceover recognition for us. Certainly sounds like it's working. Tim, what's a new feature of iOS 14 that you've been excited about?
You know, that was probably my number one, you know, feature that I was very excited about. I've actually had a great use case for it a couple times on Facebook, like Robin had used there, where, you know, Facebook tries to describe something and it gives it a very simple description, and then Apple came in behind it and described it much more in depth. So that's a good one. But really, some of my other favorites, or favorites, would be searching for emojis in iMessage. I think that that's a huge help. Not obviously, I mean, it's a huge help for everyone, but especially people who, you know, maybe use VoiceOver because you're swiping, trying to find an emoji that you want to use because that's just a thing today. I could usually care less about emojis, but, you know, they're fun, they're silly. And you can now actually type right in a search box below your message box, your text box, and just type sad or happy or wink or whatever you know to be a part of the label of that emoji, and it will immediately, you know, shorten the list of emojis to the things that have that as a description for the emoji. In a similar sense, I'll throw in an extra one here that you can now caption photos in the Photos app or in the camera roll, where before you could use VoiceOver to label the name of a photo, but that didn't always necessarily translate to other places, onto other devices necessarily. It was just on your device. But now there is, under the More section, a way that you can caption a photo, and that caption stays with that photo, at least on iOS, as far as I can tell, and sending it to other iOS devices in the cloud and things. I don't know about sending it to other people. It probably is not supported because it's obviously an iOS feature, but being able to caption a photo to give it that specific information that you want to know about the photo once you've taken it, so that you remember what was in the photo that you took. So those are some of my big favorites right now in iOS.
Well, mine's at the moment is spatial audio on the AirPods Pro. If you have AirPods Pro, get their firmware updated. I mean, it'll probably just do it for you without even realizing it. That's what happened with me. I just turned them on and there you go. But it's very good. It's a great experience, because if I'm watching something on the iPhone, it's as if, it's a weird sensation, it's as if the sound is actually coming from the iPhone via its speakers, not through, you know, directly into your ears. And when you move your head from left to right, it, you know, keeps the position of the phone. It's very strange, it really is. But I'm not getting that spatial sense at the moment, other than that sense that it's in front of me. And if I had my phone, say, in some kind of dock or even just sitting on the table, it would give me the sense of the phone, that's where the sound is coming from, but not surround sound, which is what I was kind of hoping for. But more content will come out, I'm sure, with that in it, and I haven't tried everything. Only really tried it on Apple TV Plus content at the moment, but I think definitely a good future for this, for sure. Right, look, lots of exciting stuff there. techtalk@rnib.org.uk is our email address. We do love your emails, which is why we're doing them now.
Email.
Proud of time for that. Let's get on with it. Andy, let's get into the emails.
Oh, yeah, let's fly through some emails. Right, the first one from Patrick. He emails in, "Hello, I was listening to your latest show where Samsung phones and the Samsung S7 were discussed. Who was it amongst us here who was it you, Stephen, who has an S7? Somebody has an S7.
I've got an S10 Plus. That's what I've got.
That's one of the more recent ones, isn't it? Yes.
Yeah.
I have a Samsung phone, says Patrick, and an old tablet, but I can find an app called TalkBack. Now, Samsung is great for their screen magnification, as you have noted, but the screen reader can also be used with this. I'm able to read about 2, maybe 3 lines, and then the screen reader to read the rest if I need them." That's an email from Patrick.
Yeah. And that is a brilliant feature. You've got screen reader built into Samsung, but you can then go and get, now let me get this right, it's Android Accessibility Suite, isn't it? That's the name of the full app, which contains everything relating to Android accessibility. It's a separate app that you have to download on Samsung. It doesn't come pre-installed. You get the screen reader from Samsung, not the same product. So great one. Definitely get it downloaded. If you've got a Samsung phone, get Android Accessibility Suite. Let's get another email.
"Hi guys," says Bill. "Which of the following 4 phones would you recommend to a totally blind user who uses a phone primarily to make and receive calls, messages and emails, and would want to have apps such as Seeing AI and Google Lookout? The 4 phones I am considering are," now Bill says, "the i8 SE, which I think is the Xiaomi Mi 8 SE. He also says, what about the Pixel 3a, the Samsung A31 or the Samsung A51? He says, I'm a regular listener to Tech Talk and I value your opinions. Regards." That's from Bill.
You're not going to get Seeing AI on those, but apart from that, I don't know what the relative merits of those are.
No, neither do I specifically, but I would say that, you know, we're talking here obviously the lower end Android phones, your experience, it depends again on what you're going to do with it. If you're going to use a screen reader with it, your experience might not be quite as good as you'll get with the higher end phones, but that makes perfect sense, right? You're buying a device which has got a lower end processor, it might be able to function really well without a screen reader with it. Zoom, on the other hand, or magnification might be better on those devices. Because, I mean, again, the screens are usually very good, but again, not quite as good, not quite as bright or vibrant as you'll get on the AMOLED screens. I think for me, I would say if you're looking for a low-cost solution for Android, and again, it depends on what low-cost means to you, I would seriously consider, if you have the money, look at the Google Pixel range, even if it means you're maybe looking back to the Google Pixel 3 or 3A. I would sense that's maybe a good idea to look there, because you know you could pick one up on second hand on eBay or whatever, you know, a refurbished phone, doesn't have to be brand new. You could save some money, and you're going to get stock Android, which means you'll get the latest Android updates when they come through as well. So yeah, that would be my kind of advice if you're looking to go down that road.
And probably a better screen reader experience, more availability of certain apps, unfortunately not necessarily seeing A, like Robin said, but in an Android, looking for an Android specific phone, I think that's the right idea there, Stephen, is to go for like the 3 or 3A. If it was iPhone, obviously we'd be saying the SE at that price with the processor and everything that's in it. The iPhone SE 2020 would be the one, but I think the 3.
I think my earlier suggestion a year ago back was the Moto G 6 or G 5. Which was quite a low-cost phone. I think it was like 150 quid or something. And again, it was good. Again, you know, as you're experiencing, I think initially with a screen reader, you'll find that you go quite slow. So therefore, the speed you're not aware of. If you're just learning a screen reader on a phone or on a computer, the speed doesn't really matter so much because you don't have an expectation. The problem is the more you get into it, the more you start to use it, that gap starts to appear, I think. That would be my take on it.
And don't forget Envision AI as a really viable alternative to Seeing AI for Android. Really
and
good.
And Google Lookout as well. Google
you mentioned that, yeah, help. But I think Envision AI has still got some things going for it, and it's being developed apace.
Okay, well, look, we are out of time, as we always seem to be, but really great show again, guys. I've had a great lot of fun talking about all of this wonderful stuff. We're going to be back again next week at the same time. And looking forward to a Google event as well. Lots to talk about there, so lots of new products to discuss. Looking forward to all that. For now, though, Tim Schwartz from lifeafterblindness.com, Robin Christofferson from AbilityNet, and emails Andy. Thanks, guys.
Thanks a lot.
Thank you very much.